welcome back to the Total Clarity Podcast. I'm Jesse Hyatt.
And I'm Mike Varley. And this is our fifth recorded episode and our first episode where we've done a walk for the week.
Yeah, this week we did our first route. It was North Brooklyn, First Impressions, and More, right? Isn't that the correct title?
North Brooklyn and More, First Impressions.
Oh, I mixed it up.
Actually, no, I got it wrong too. First Impressions, North Brooklyn and More.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
We were there all week, but I guess we weren't repeating the title over and over to ourselves.
No.
But yeah, we did it. We completed 5 days of marathon walking in a row.
That's right.
Yeah. Mike did 5 days in a row. I did 5 days in a row, but two of those days were 15 miles for me.
Yes, Jessie joined a couple of times midway because she still has a dye studio that she's running.
I
so
do.
She's navigating how exactly it's going to look from any week to week, how much she'll join us. But that was a known part of the project.
Yeah.
So it is our intention to have one of us do the walk every day. And that will be me the vast majority of the time, unless something unforeseen happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was a crazy week, a lot of expected things and a lot of unexpected things, which are expected in a way, since you can only plan for so much. And yeah, I think we should just get right into it.
Yeah, let's get right into it. I guess in relation to what you just said, we had everything planned out, and then we had to switch things around because of COVID. So now that feeling of having everything planned out but having some unexpected things, I think, is even easier to deal with. For me, at least, because I've just spent this last 3 months not using any of the plans that I thought I was going to use and readjusting to that. And yeah, really for like the first time in my adult life, even, I'm a planner. I like to know what I'm doing. I like to have it all figured out way in advance. And the last 3 months made me really refocus how I think about that. And I think it's helpful for what we've already started to embark on, because there are things that are unexpected and are out of our control.
Yeah, absolutely. And in addition to that, we've been thinking a lot about what it is to be on these walks and what has appealed to us about these walks. And a big component of the walking that was appealing is that the act of getting from point A to B every day is in itself very fulfilling and kind of simplifies a lot of what it means to be accomplished in a day-to-day life. And that's one of those things that we can intellectualize and understand outside of the context of walking, but at the same time, it's something that you can't truly understand until you're actually doing the act. So particularly with this 3-month delay, it allowed us an opportunity to think a lot about what potentially we could be doing while we're walking and maximizing the time to be able to create a lot of documentation to share with you now and to also have at the conclusion of whenever this is. And it becomes very apparent between the ramping up of our bodies and the heat and also the aforementioned fulfillment of the walk itself, that a lot of those things are actually not as important once you're doing the actual walking. So that is a thing that we're going to see how it sorts itself out in the coming weeks, if we feel a need to be doing a lot of documentation or if we don't.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of a tricky thing to figure out, because we are doing this for ourselves. We want to honor that, but at the same time, we are doing it publicly and we want to honor that. So if it was purely for ourselves and we weren't sharing about it at all, then we might just forget about all the content building and sharing portions and just walk and be satisfied with that. And that's it. And now when we do walk and we feel satisfied with that, we still feel like we want to make this a public thing and we want to have it be something that people can engage with if they choose to, and something that can potentially build community. And so we don't want to, you know, I don't know if let people down is the right word, or kind of leave that bit out, since that is important to us to be able to engage with people.
Yeah. And it is, there is also this idea of the people that we are on the walk and the people that we are when we're not walking. And the person that I am when I'm not walking, when I have the amount of free time that we've had the past 3 months, when I'm not working a full-time job, would like to be able to create things and document things because I find it compelling for myself and to share with people. But the person that is on the walk has less of a concern about that sort of thing. That doesn't mean that we actually made a 360 video, which will already be out by the time this podcast is out. We're recording this podcast, so that's obviously a thing that we would like to continue to see. We also did some long form recording, which we haven't done previously, but had always intended to do for the walk, which is capturing large chunks of the walk, potentially with some theme surrounding it, and then having it as an opportunity for people to kind of join us in a way where you really are just there experiencing the walk. So really, we did pretty much everything that we said we were going to do.
Yeah.
It's just an issue of economy of effort when you're out there doing things, as well as quality bars and seeing if you can hit that. And again, just, what is it that's the function of this project? And if it's to be as present as possible, do these things detract? So that's all stuff we're going to be figuring out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out as we're out there. And yeah. I guess that's why in our last little segment where we shared that we were about to start this, that was, I was trying to get that across, that, you know, it's really nice that people have been engaging with certain elements of this so far, and we love it, and we would love to continue that both for us and for the people that have been engaged. But I don't want to hold us to any sort of standard, and we will get out as much as we can, and we'll feel it out as we go. And right now we do have these sort of regular segments, if you will, that have been coming out during the last 3 months, but we might end up doing new regular segments that will hopefully replace those in a similar way and be just as entertaining, but maybe make more sense for what it is that we're doing and how physically active we can be with the video making.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would have been a very different scenario had we started when we intended to start. But that certainly is not something that happened.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, because we've created these things that, like you said, were based on not walking 26 miles a day, but rather going out once a week and doing something in the neighborhood and then coming home and being on the computer for all week. And it's a different lifestyle now that we're walking over 100 miles a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here we are. We're in it. So should we tell the people where we went? Should we tell them what neighborhoods we saw?
I think that's a good idea.
Okay, great.
Why don't you tell us a little bit
about it? Okay, so, the route, let's talk about it in terms of the way that it is on the website. So if someone wants to follow along on the map, they can see in the order that we're talking. We did go backwards a couple days. But we can just stick to
talking about it in the
direction it was.
It's also not entirely clear on the map which is forwards and which is backwards because it's a loop.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so the way that was forwards in our mind was that we left our house. We went out through Bushwick, out to Greenpoint, and we got there on either Central or Wilson, one of the streets that runs all the way. We went through the area where there's a lot of industry on our way into Greenpoint. We walked all the way around the water. That brought us through downtown Brooklyn and the Navy Yards. We got to Red Hook, went out to the pier, crossed over the Gowanus Canal, and walked under the BQE to get to Sunset Park, where Industry City was sort of our turnaround spot. Some days we went a little further. I think one day we went to 52nd Street, which was the route, but some days we cut it a little shorter because we were going over a marathon length. And then we went up to 5th or 6th Avenue and walked through Park Slope, got to Fort Greene, went through Bed-Stuy, hit Crown Heights a little bit, and took one of the main roads home, usually on Decatur. We could take Decatur for a long time.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. So that was the path, and maybe we should share some highlights of that path.
Yeah. What are some highlights you have?
Well, one thing that we saw on the first day that I thought was really cool, and then we kept checking in on it on the other days, was down in the Columbia Street waterfront area, where there were these tree carvings on the sidewalk. So we were down there the first day, kind of early in the morning, maybe it was 10 a.m. or something, do you think? And we saw these etchings, I guess you could call them, on the sidewalk. And it was, you could see there was a tree, like a street tree, and the shadow of the tree had been etched into the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. But they were from the winter, and I think the first one we saw was from 2009 around 3:30 p.m. So we got excited that one day on the backwards route we would be able to see what it looked like maybe around that same time. And we did actually end up back there around 3:30, but maybe you thought of this ahead of time. I didn't even consider it. It's summer and the tree's in full bloom and has leaves. So the shadow looked nothing like what the etching was. It was in the same direction, but it's like a huge shadow with just little light droplets through it, as opposed to the sticks, you know, the empty tree in that it would be in the winter. Do you remember who the artist was that made those?
I'm going to look it up now while we're talking. But yes, there were a number of trees on the street, including one that had a memoriam. The tree had been cut down. I don't know if it was during the course of the project or not. It would appear to be during the course of the project. However, the etchings looked like it was all done in one session.
Mm.
But perhaps it was not. I guess it couldn't be unless they deliberately took down the tree 3 months later. It had to have been done at a separate time. So this one particular tree was missing. It was an etching in the ground, and it said in memoriam from 3/11/2011 to 6/11/2011, I believe were the dates. And you looked, and there was a tree pit with a stump where the tree had been previously. All the other ones that we'd seen, the tree still existed.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. So the tree in memoriam was from 3/21/2011 to 6/21/2011. So a slight correction there. And as far as the artist, I have a lot of pictures from the week, so it's giving me a bit of a hard time. It's a Japanese artist, Nobuo Nagasawa, and the name of the project is Timecast. So if anybody wants to look that up, they can do so. Yeah. But that was one thing that we saw along.
Yeah, that was a really cool thing. And I feel like I've been down there since then, but I've never noticed something like that before.
Yeah.
So those sorts of little things that even in all these neighborhoods that we know really well, there were these new things that we had never noticed before.
Mm-hmm.
Like what were some things that you saw that you had never seen before?
When we were in South Williamsburg, there were a bunch of complexes, it's like two or three, that had these big courtyards that were gated off. And inside the courtyards, there were 30 plus bicycles and tricycles that were just left strewn about the courtyard. And we saw them in the mornings and we were fascinated by them. We actually took some pictures, and if you see our Friday Instagram post, you can take a look at what was going on there. And as best we could discern, particularly from passing them in the afternoon and seeing the courtyard active, it's a majority, if not exclusively, Hasidic apartment complex, and it affords the space for there to only be one or two adults watching all of the kids as they get the chance to play in an unstructured way. And we both thought that was pretty cool, that it was just this community that was self-contained within this one courtyard that was able to, you know, feel like they could have their kids roam around without there being any concern for their safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I thought it was nice to see. At first, when we walked by and all the bicycles were all over the place, my first thought was like, oh my gosh, what a mess. There's no order here. But then, yeah, when we walked by and they were actually active, it felt more like, oh, this is like the living room for the kid. You know, when you go to someone's house and they have young kids and the toys, it might be all over the place. Like, the kids aren't, they like get distracted and they don't put things away exactly how they need to be. And it's kind of nice that there's some outdoor space at that apartment complex where the kids can kind of do their thing and do their kid thing and leave their bike wherever. And it's like, it seems, I mean, this is all supposition, but it seems like no one really minds, because it seems like there's some kind of order to that. It looks like chaos to me, but it seems like there must be some kind of order and patience with it. And like, it's just the way it is. Let the kids be free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what else was interesting? We went to under all three of the bridges, the Manhattan, the Brooklyn, and the Williamsburg, not in that order. And we found a little secret passage under the Manhattan Tunnel that neither of us knew about.
Yeah, that was really
cool. Or Manhattan Bridge, not tunnel. That it was a situation where if you went too far on one street, rather than having to go back a block and a half to get under the bridge, there was this passageway that was shoulder width wide that you could go into in order to get across. And it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It felt like, I don't know, it either felt like we were getting away with something, or it felt like we were going into Narnia, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also passed by McGoldrick Park when we were in Greenpoint, and one of the days that we were there, there were some kids that were up on one of the statues that we covered in our 360 video back in May. And that was funny. I wondered if it had anything to do with the fact that statues are coming down right now, that people are less inclined to like interfere with people's interactions with statues.
Oh, maybe. That's interesting thought.
But yeah,
they seemed young, the kids.
Yeah. They were somewhere like 12, I think.
Okay.
Somewhere between 10 and 12. And they were like talking about like Pokemon or something, like, you know, like just like something just silly. And just hanging out like they own the place.
Yeah.
And nobody was saying anything. And yeah, it was a very strange scene. I've certainly not seen anything like that there.
No, and you wouldn't expect it. Also, the playground was open.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Something that I expect we'll see more of in the future, but was surprising to see for the first time, was seeing the same people in different points of the city on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we did, we visited Bush Terminal Park at the suggestion of our friend Layla, who works for the Parks Department,
mm-hmm.
which is a converted sewage plant, basically waste facility.
Yeah, it was like a sludge dump or something.
Yeah. right by the Upper Bay of New York and Sunset Park, and it has beautiful views of the city. It's a little hidden away, which is cool too. You wouldn't know it was there unless you were explicitly told, because you have to go through an area where there's offices or just kind of an industrial avenue.
Yeah.
And So we took a 360 video there. That's up for people to check out. And while we were there, there was a disabled person being pushed around by a, I don't know if it was his aide or his relative or mm-hmm. something, but they were going out. It was the middle of the afternoon just to enjoy the space and kind of get out. And we just took minor note of it, nothing of consequence. But then 4 to 6 hours later, when we're in South Williamsburg, we saw the same person being pushed by a different person.
Yeah.
And just, again, looks like they were going out to get some air or something.
But it was in a completely different part of the neighborhood, or I mean, part of Brooklyn.
Yeah.
The first time we were down in Sunset Park, the second time it was over near Williamsburg. So it's a really pretty significant distance. It did look like when we were leaving the Bush Terminal area, I noticed in the parking lot, it did look like there was a van, like a, I don't know if it was like a social service kind of type van, you know,
yeah,
a van that could hold wheelchairs,
yeah,
basically. So I assume that it was maybe, yeah, the person was with his aide in the morning and then maybe with family member in the evening or something. But that was cool to see the same person all the way across town. And yeah, we wondered if he recognized us too, or if it was just one way. And then, you know, wondering if there's other people that we just didn't notice that that happened with.
Yeah. Well, I know you mentioned that on separate days, you saw the same man on a scooter.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, one of the days when I had to go to work in the morning and I biked over to meet you, I was right behind this guy on a scooter, and he had a fireman's pin on his bag, but he was going kind of slow. So it was like these two things. I was just behind him for a while, you know, waiting to pass. And I'm noticing like, oh, he's a fireman. I wonder if he's going to work, or, you know, having these thoughts. And then I think it was the next day we were walking, and it was in the same area where I had passed him on my bike. He was in the scooter, but we were walking this time, but he was on his scooter in the bike lane. I saw the pin again, and same guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. And we also encountered not the same person, but the same sets of people several times. Do you remember the name offhand?
State of Mind, I think.
State of Mind, yes. And they were a group. They had a pretty good sales tactic. The idea was they had these bags that were not like Tiffany-esque bags, you mm-hmm. know, that kind of structured, what is it? It's not plastic. What is it?
No, it's like a coated paper or something, yeah. Maybe like a waxed paper even.
Yeah.
Like tall, a nice gray. They looked like gift bags,
yeah,
or something.
Like something you could get if you go to a fancy event. And so the strategy was they'd approach you and go, have you gotten your bag yet? And so the first time we encountered this type of person, we said no. And then he attempted to hand us the bag, which we declined for a couple of reasons, primarily because we figure it's a pandemic right now, and if we don't want something, we don't want to touch it.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch someone's bag and then hand it back to them.
But also because from being in New York City long enough, you don't generally take something that somebody's giving to you, because it becomes a lot harder to give it back to them if they're trying to sell it to you. And in fact, that was the case.
Yeah.
They had these products that sounded really great, all made in the city. And it was like a beanie and some soap, I think.
Yeah, and something like that. And some other self-care product. And
yeah,
I don't remember.
Yeah. And it was, you know, retails for 50, but yours for 22.
Right.
And it was, you know, we politely declined. In addition to that, we weren't going to carry this bag for 20 plus miles, you know, while we're walking. So the first time we encountered a salesperson for this, we had a little discussion about what we were doing. And in fact, he was the first person that we told, period, about what we were doing. He seemed a little confused, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think he was like, his motive is to get out there and sell those bags. And he's probably like, I just, you guys don't want to buy the bag. I got to go. Like, I gotta... That's kind of what it seemed like.
Yeah.
But he was very nice. And
yeah, absolutely.
It's not like we talked to him for that long.
Yeah. And we didn't think much of it. And then the next day, in a different part of the city, somebody approached us with the same thing. That was a much shorter conversation because they said, did you get your bag yet? And we said, oh, no, but we talked to somebody already. Thank you. And then they laughed and moved on. And then a third time, it happened in a different part of the city. The first time it was around the Navy Yard area. The second time it was in the Fort Greene area. And the third time it was in the Brooklyn Bridge Park area. And each time it was the same, you know, setup. Did you get your bag yet? Mm-hmm. No. And yeah, I mean, it's a great way to try and get people to engage in.
Yeah, you know. I guess so. Well, so this actually happened to me. The reason I wanted to talk to the first guy is because just a few days before we started walking, someone approached me when I was out on my own and said, did you get your bag yet? And it was right down the street. I had just kind of been hovering on the edge of a protest. And then I was leaving to go to work, and I assumed it was part of the protest. I assumed it was waters and snacks or something like that. And I obviously wasn't going to take it because I wasn't at the protest anymore. And I was right near my studio, so I didn't need water or snacks or anything like that. But then when we saw the guy, there were no protests nearby. It was early in the morning. It was like, I was curious what it was. And I'm glad we figured it out.
It was a funny place for him to be. He was obviously on the way from somewhere to somewhere, but it was kind of like an ant missing its colony.
Yeah, I just feel like that. Yeah, it was over near the Navy Yards and just on one of those random streets that's all industry.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was an interesting thing we saw. We also stopped by Jesse's old restaurant.
Yeah.
Athena's in Park Slope.
Athena's Mediterranean Cuisine on 6th Ave and 14th Street.
Yep.
Go there if you're nearby. They're open. Outdoor dining. It's good food. I worked there from when I was 18 till I was about 22. So I worked there for like 6 years. And no, that's 5 years. 4 years.
3 years. 2 years. 1 year. She never worked there.
My fast math is not working. I thought I worked there longer than 4 years. I don't know. I worked there from when I was 18 till I was in my early 20s at some point. And yeah, it was a great place to work. Spiro's the owner, and he is a really nice guy. And I'm happy to see that they're doing well. And it was nice to stop by and just get to say hi and see that things are opening back up for them. He was pretty excited, I think, to be back at work.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed that way. And we also mentioned Industry City earlier. Industry City ended up being a pretty vital hub for us, which we think we'll be using many more times in the course of this walk, because that part of Brooklyn, which is 3rd Avenue in the mid-30s, is really, as far as how we planned out a lot of the walks, kind of the main way to get from South Brooklyn to North Brooklyn. And I don't think I'd had an opportunity to be there except for one other time when Jesse had an art show there with our guest next week, Tahir Karmali. You can get the plug in now. And so, yeah, I hadn't had a chance to experience it. And it was still, I think, pretty new then.
Yeah.
And it's a nice place. And it's also nice during a pandemic because there's hardly anybody there.
Yeah, there's a lot of bathrooms and not many people inside. And there's a bunch of outdoor seating sort of all spread out. There's like benches, there's chairs and tables, there's reclining wooden chairs, and yeah, lots of places. And it was a nice little spot to rest.
Yeah.
I think we rested there every day.
Yeah. In some fashion or another, we stopped there for a little bit.
Yeah.
Just because it has access to the bathrooms and whatnot.
Well, the one place that was really nice at Industry City too, they have a Zahatis out there. I've always really liked Zahatis because I lived in Gowanus for a while, and my roommate Layla introduced me to that place, and we used to go for bulk foods and, all the nuts and cheeses and all the yummy stuff that they have there. So we got some grape leaves, and Mike got some orzo salad, and yeah, we were able to have a nice little lunch from Zahatis a couple of days. We didn't always eat there because, too much of a good thing is too much. Is that the phrase?
Too much of a good thing is wonderful is actually the phrase.
Oh, but that's a nice phrase.
I know.
I thought it was.
Well, there's a couple of phrases.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the one that's like, don't spoil, like too much of a good thing is not wonderful?
I don't know the exact phrase, but I understand what you're saying. Could be there's such a thing as too much as a good thing. I don't know.
This is interesting. I think I've always thought too much of a good thing is too much. Like that idea is what I always understood. But then you think too much of a good thing is wonderful. That's a completely different way of looking at the
I don't know
world.
if that's Mae West or it's like a thing you would find on a throw pillow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so well anyway, we did 2 days at Zahatis, and that's all we gave ourselves there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of too much is a good thing,
What?
why don't we talk about some of the challenges we've had on the walk so far that we've
Okay.
encountered?
Yeah, well, yeah, let's do it. One of the challenges, which I think was actually kind of a good thing, so I'll just ease us into it.
Okay.
There was very little pain
That's true.
in the first week,
Yeah.
which I wasn't expecting. Were you expecting that?
I don't know. I think the Washington trip went so well last time that it was not outside the realm of possibility. But yeah, I mean, it was,
Yeah.
yeah, go on, talk about your pain.
No, that's a good point. But I guess I just have the memories of the first trips that we've done where the first couple days, like I remember very distinctly asking you if my thighs were going to blow up or if that was a thing that could possibly happen. So there was nothing like that at all that I felt. I got two blisters, both on my big toes, which was annoying, but fine. We have the blister pads that I could use to protect them for the other days. And my feet got tired and a little sore. And I think my calves got kind of tired and sore at the end of the days. But other than that, it was fine. It
Yeah.
wasn't, because in the past, the tired and the sore is just. That's just tired and sore, not the real kind of intense pain where you're maybe limping a little bit or you sit down and stand up and you're like hobbling around, which is what has happened in the past to my body. But for whatever reason, it was seemed pretty ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let's hear about your pains.
Sure. Well, before we get to that, on the Washington trip, you did have some blister issues, so
Oh, I did. You're right. Yeah.
that would be fresh in your mind.
Yeah.
For mine, I didn't have any blisters, which is great, and I kind of expected that. I don't, always want to be abundantly cautious when talking about pain, because any day a blister could form or anything just based
Yeah.
on how wet your feet are, or just the state of your shoes, or anything really. So, those could very well come at some point. But I did not get any blisters. I did have one of my toenails was cutting into a toe. So, I was bleeding at the end of the day, but I didn't even really realize it was a meaningful pain until then. And really, the one thing that was concerning to me is my right Achilles. That basically at the bottom, towards where the ankle is, it is in pain. Not an amount of pain that is something that really holds me back, but more something that has been an anxiety relative to the fact that we're going to be doing this for such an extended period of time, provided everything goes well, that it was just was and may still be in the future get in my head a little bit. Because at the end of the day, on a couple of days, it basically sounded like a dried out rubber band.
Yeah, it didn't sound great.
That you were pulling, if you know, you pulled, it was like. So it hasn't done that since we've had this time off right now. So I'm hopeful that that will be a thing that doesn't stick around. It also looks like maybe I bruised it, like the first or second day. Because really all it takes is one bad step on a curb or something and you twist your ankle a little bit. And so I think that's maybe what happened. So hopefully just several days of healing it and not doing anything will allow it to resolve itself.
Yeah.
But...
ICE Elevate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's an acronym that I tried to tell you about the other day that I still haven't looked up. I don't remember what it is.
But... Yeah, there hasn't been anything like the pain that we've experienced on the previous walks, but there are definitely things that I would consider challenges as far as management of mental state.
Mm-hmm.
I have not had the same appetite, which is kind of familiar from the other walks. But something that, if we're going to be doing this for a long time, concerns me. There were a couple of times, like when we stopped at Industry City, I would get things that were a little more substantive than I really felt the need for, and then would just kind of force down as much as I could. So we're looking into solutions that are more just purely energy-based, like drinks that we can make in the morning and energy bars and things like that. On Thursday, I had very little to eat except for those types of things, and that was the day that I felt the best. Mm. So we'll see if we can transition to something that's closer to that.
Yeah, it'll be easy to carry too, because this first week we were trying to make all the food for, our goal was to make enough food for 3 weeks of walking.
Yeah.
And we were able to make dinners for 3 weeks. And we have stuff for breakfast and lunch, but because we didn't really do a great job of getting it packaged and ready to go, we weren't really prepared with carrying all of our lunches. So we did just go and get lunch in Industry City each day, which was fine for the first week, but ultimately long term, that's not gonna work either for the budget or for efficiency of the walk or for, you know, knowing where food is, or because I have celiac disease and Industry City is easy to get gluten-free food, but I don't know where we're gonna be every day moving forward. So lots of different reasons. I had a hard time eating the first 2 days, but then by the end, I mean, by Thursday, I ate all of my lunch and half of your lunch. I had no problem eating. So I'm not as concerned about it from that perspective, but more just I want to make sure I'm not hungry all day and make sure that I'm giving myself the calories that I need. My blood sugar tends to drop real quick. And sort of, when that happens, I just need something. So, yeah, having things that we can carry and easily eat, and also not have to stop just to eat, I think might be nice. Resting when we want to rest and then eating when we want to eat. So,
yeah.
If we're just stopping to eat a bar, then that can happen at any time when we're resting. That can even happen while we're walking. And then the rest can be more focused on stretching and things like that.
Yeah. So that's an issue that we'll be watching. Also, it generally felt sick a couple of days, and I'm not sure if that's dehydration or sun fatigue or what have you. The first 3 days weather-wise were cloudless the entire time. And I also wore a hat, so it was, those were definitely the sweatiest days. The fourth and fifth day, there were clouds more sporadically, and so that was useful. But I did get sunburn on the top of my head when I wasn't wearing a hat. So we're going to have to figure out how that works. I did get it.
Does anyone know if there's any like scalp sunscreen that we can get?
Yeah. I did get a haircut yesterday for the first time since the quarantine. So that hopefully could help as far as heat under the hat if I need to wear a hat. But we'll see how that works. And we're just going to try and drink more water. Next week's going to be a little different. We're going to go a little more far afield, covering some beach areas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there's a big gauntlet towards the end where we're walking on a road that I think is going to be more like what we've done on our vacations, which is just car roads. So that's going to be, water management's going to be interesting there.
Yeah, this week, the first day, I wore my Camelback backpack and I filled up the water in there, not quite to the top, but almost to the top, because I wasn't sure where there would be water refill stations, between just not knowing in general where it's going to be, but also with COVID, I'm not sure how many water fountains are on and how many are off. And it actually turned out on this last week, there were a lot of water fill stations. There was in Industry City, we could use water fountain. In Brooklyn Bridge Park, there's one on either end. There's actually like a water bottle fill. I don't know that we had to use it anywhere else. Maybe in McGolrick, there might have been a
there were a couple
fountain
of parks
that I used. Yeah. Some of them, they were off though. So that's what I can think of. But yeah, we ended up, so the first day I did bring the Camelback, but then the other days we were able to get away with just the little, we have these platypuses that are like, are they 16 ounces? No, 32 ounces.
They're a liter, yeah.
Yeah. So that gets us through a quarter, a third of the day or so, and then they get refilled a number of times.
Yeah. So I was trying to force myself to drink even if I didn't feel like I had to drink. And hopefully that will keep some of this sickness feeling we've been having at bay.
Yeah.
Not enough to, you know, debilitate. A lot of this stuff is more just the fact that we're so early on, things that we're feeling take on a sense of a lot more enormity because there's so much to do. So once things are identified as either going away or at a level where we can understand and know what to expect from them, that's when we'll start settling into routines.
Yeah. Yeah. Once we, like this first week there, while we were out there, we realized there's a handful of things that we need to get that we don't have yet. And there's a handful of things that we need to do differently. And there's a handful of things that, you know, to restructure our schedule and whatnot. So just readjusting on those things. And yeah, hopefully once we do those, then it'll be less and less that we haven't thought of. I mean, I expect as the seasons change, as we get further into this, there's still going to be stuff that we have to adjust for. And we should probably be ready for that. But I think probably the beginning is always the trickiest because it's reconfiguring everything.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And the fact that we started in the summer, not by choice.
Right.
Is also probably, this is either going to be the first or second hardest season, most likely. We don't know for certain, obviously. But yeah, just the having to deal with ramping up your bodies in the heat season.
Yeah, it's hot.
Yeah.
It was the first week, really, too, of it being hot.
Yeah.
Even last week, I guess it was officially the first day of summer is when we started. Well, no, that's not true. We started the day after the official first day of summer. But it was the 21st, which we always think is the first day of summer. So
yes, we attribute the 21st personally as the first day of summer. However, it fluctuates based on the calendar year. It could be anywhere from the 20th to the 22nd.
So yeah.
We chose to do the 21st because that felt good for us as a starting day.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. I think, we'll just adjust as the weather changes and see how it affects our bodies.
Yeah. And then coming home is also a thing that we're going to have to get used to as far as what we have the ability to do. I think the fact that there is a clock that kind of starts as soon as we get in the door is something that gives me a little bit of anxiety and going to have to get used to because really, I mean, we could go to bed at midnight and then wake up at 10 and start, but then that means that it just throws the rest of the week off. So
Yeah.
there really, once you get in, getting home at 7 versus getting home at 8:30 is a very different story. We're trying to get to bed at around 10 so that we can get 8 hours, somewhere between 7 and 8 hours of sleep before we do the next day. And there are all sorts of tasks that are associated with that, aside from just the basics of getting ready for the next day, but anything that comes in email wise or just other things of life that you have to keep up with will be competing for our attention each of those days. And yeah, just getting into perspective, all of those things, and yeah, coming to terms with some things taking longer than others to get done.
Yeah, we're just getting into a groove. It's not the thing we're doing each day isn't the same as going to the office where if you okay, tonight I accidentally didn't get to sleep till 1 or 2 in the morning and I have to be up at 8, no big deal for what we're doing. If we don't get to bed at till 1 or 2 in the morning, we're not gonna have a good day
Yeah.
the next day. And because what we're doing is all physical, and we want to make sure to keep ourselves healthy throughout this, especially in the beginning when we're just getting started, we don't want to be trying to walk 26 miles on 4 hours of sleep. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
But we'll figure out a routine.
Yeah.
It has been helpful. I'm glad we did try to make all the meals ahead of time. That was major. I don't think coming home after a full day out and trying to cook something would work very well.
Yeah.
So.
Although ironically, I don't think we've eaten any of the meals that you prepared the Saturday before.
We did. We had the soup, we had the chili, and we had the
The chili was already cooked.
other thing.
The chili and the coconut tofu.
Oh, that's true.
Jesse's made some
I made
fantastic things so far, but I'm excited
the
to
soup, though.
the, yeah, the soup was good. I'm excited to see the things that she has
Yeah, well,
made for
most of it
us.
ended up going into the freezer since we actually had leftover stuff from the whole week before because I've been cooking a lot during this
Yeah.
time. But
And when we move forward, we have a plan where we both do a cooking day
yeah.
the Sunday before, which we've implemented once but have yet to do, the live version of. But last week was, before we started, was kind of a frenzy of trying to get things done. And there's still things that need to be done that haven't been done from that frenzy weekend. So
Yeah. Well, we'll also see because we had this idea that we would do that together, but you've really taken on the video editing and that kind of thing. So if every 3 weeks that means that I'm cooking and you're editing, that works too.
yeah, we'll see
Yeah.
how it all plays out.
Yeah.
And I think the hardest thing for me so far is the morning. I don't know if you feel the same way or not, but just waking up and getting ready to go. The idea that we have, I want to get out the door so that I can get back sooner, and just there's a lot of expectations that you have to play with yourself in order to get going. Once we're out in the world, that's kind of the easiest part for me because you're just on a track, and you just keep moving forward. But the morning time so far has been difficult because it's like, getting started on a right foot or not.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing I've been struggling a little bit with in the morning is, well, I don't like waking up early. So, and we've been waking up early, and I think we'll get used to it. But at 6 in the morning, I'm not really ready to eat breakfast yet. I forget that coffee's even an option. Once I remember, then I'm fine, honestly. But it's sort of like, ugh, to get in the shower. Like, everything feels, like, hard. And then I want to be good about stretching and doing things, you know, drink a lot of water, eat breakfast, stretch. Those are really the things I want to do in the morning before we go. But then if I sit down to stretch, I also want to get out, especially now that it's hot. I want to, like, get out and get going. So it's this balance and push and pull between wanting to do all the stuff that I really should do in the morning to prep my body for the day, and then just knowing that we have such a long day ahead of us and wanting to, like, jump into it.
Yeah.
But not wanting to rush that stuff that is important in order to be able to jump into it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think, again, it's like we'll reset our rhythms. At this, up until now, I've always liked to stretch in the morning, but if I skip it, it's not a big deal. And the things that I have to do during the day, when I'm going to my studio or something, have nothing to do really with my physical body. It's more about getting stuff made and getting stuff out and stuff like that. And if I'm a little bit sore, it's not a big deal. Whereas if I'm a little bit sore during the day with a walking, then that is a big deal.
Yeah. One of the nice things that the pandemic afforded me was the ability to get into doing a bunch of yoga. And so I was doing it 5 times a week, all restorative stuff, because I needed it based on the amount of time that I was using the computer, because the computer really messes up my upper back shoulder area. But now I have it so that I've been doing these 15-minute yoga sessions before we start the walks, and that's been working well. And also, now that we're having these, when we have the days off, I'm already used to the idea of doing the 1-hour sessions. So I did one yesterday. I'll do one today or tomorrow, I'm not sure. And basically, I think that probably was one of the reasons why we weren't experiencing as much pain.
That's a good point. Yeah, we were doing a good job with that.
Yeah.
The muscles were stretched.
Yeah. I think that outlines the challenges for me so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. Let's see. We did the clothing that we were wearing was a test out, right? We tested out. We each have 5 outfits.
Yes.
1 for each day.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I have 3 outfits that are shorts and a top, and then 2 that are, well, 1 that's a dress and 1 that's a caftan. And I was a little bit surprised by, although I guess not fully surprised, you know, the dress and the caftan were totally easy to walk in, but they are hotter
mm-hmm.
than the shorts, just because they both go almost down to the ground. When the breeze hits, it's really nice and it kind of all flows open and the breeze, like, hits my legs then. But when it's just hot sun and there's no breeze, it's a little bit hotter.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'd say that's a challenge, but it was just, it was something I was a little, especially the caftan, I was a little anxious about how that would be to walk in. I had walked around in it just inside, but walking 26 miles is a different story. And I was pleasantly surprised that it was, or I guess surprised isn't probably the right word because I chose it, but it was a pleasant thing to know that it wasn't a problem.
Right.
And yeah, and what about you? Did you have any thoughts on what you were wearing and, like, which pieces are good for which days and or anything like that?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to look at the calendar or the weather more intently moving forward and plot out days accordingly. I have pants, I think, in the rotation for 4 of the 5 days or 3 of the 5 days. But I only wore them, I think, for 2 of the 5 days and used some secondary clothes we had. The benefit of the pants is that I don't have to apply the sunblock as regularly, which, yeah, I have to do it every 2 hours. I got burned the first day a little bit. I mean, just on my face. And that's just kind of going to be the way it is. I have to do that or I'll get burned. There's really no way, no two ways about it. So, but the dirt that accumulates on your legs, particularly the back of your heels when you're wearing shorts, is pretty meaningful. So it's ultimately a trade-off constantly to decide which one's going to work. But yeah, so that's a consideration. Also, we'll see how our clothing holds up on first washing and subsequent washes. So we didn't have a chance, and I don't know if we're going to have a chance on, you know, moving forward to show off some of these clothes because of the pandemic. You know, the events were considered a big part of what the initial plan was, and that's taken a left turn. But we did do a video of it on the YouTube. You can check out that video. And also the clothing page has been updated on our website, so you can see what the clothes look like there.
Mm-hmm.
And we got some good responses from wearing the clothes out and about, including this one woman that stopped Jesse and asked her if she had made the dress. And
turned out I had.
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't made the dress. It was a vintage or secondhand dress itself, but it was cream colored, and then I had painted some wavy line sort of thing on it.
Yeah. So she was interested and then walked away and then came back and asked for some sort of identification so she could check it out. So we gave her one of our stickers. So that was cool.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah.
There were two things that we swapped out that I've already had conversation with someone about based on wearing it. And so should we explain what that is?
Sure.
So each season, we had planned to make dichotities, which, for anyone that doesn't quite know what that is yet, let's explain it. So
sure.
The dichotities are a set of t-shirts. Mike would be wearing one. I would be wearing the other. They use similar words, but the words on one are different than the placement of the words on the other so that they mean something completely different. So should we share what spring was?
Sure.
Because I think that's already out there. So spring is you are not your thoughts on one of them. And then the other one is all we are is thought. So we had some dichotities planned for the summer, and we got the screens made. And let me back up a little bit. So the way that the dichotities would work, our idea for that is that each one of us picked the phrase that resonated the most with us, and then we would be wearing them once a week. But they were also meant to be something that we could sell and something that people could hopefully engage with. It's some part of the point of wearing a uniform, if you will, each day is that clothing is a way to communicate with people. And especially if there's words on clothing, then people can read that. And if they have something to say directly to us, they can say that. If it just makes them maybe think about this concept, that's great. And then, you know, at events, we were hoping that we could have them for sale and people could sort of debate which phrase makes the most sense to them and which one is relevant to whatever is going on in the world. So anyway, we had a set of dichotities planned for summer and we got the screens made. But I think the day that we were meant to print them was one of the first days of all the protests, the Black Lives Matter protests that come from the killing of George Floyd and the killing of many other people and the, you know, everyone being super tired of police violence and needing that to change now. So we felt like the Dichotity was something that we could swap out and make more relevant to what's going on in terms of current events related to the social justice movement that's happening right now. And in a way to communicate about that while we're walking, and also in a way to hold ourselves accountable to continue to communicate about that throughout the year, even if the protests die down or the news stops covering it, or it's not just in, you know, right in front of us all the time, it'll still keep us in conversation with it.
That's right. So basically the last 2 weeks before we started the walk, we took on a flurry of activity trying to figure out something that would be relevant for us to wear and also relevant for us to bring into this period of walking. So what we came up with for the summer was a series that will probably be just for this season, but I can't say definitively.
Yeah, we'll
it's
see.
Called Unreported. And what Jesse and I did as part of our investigation into the NYPD budget, which you can see on our fourth episode of the podcast, I believe.
I think so.
You can check that out on YouTube and all the other ways. In addition to that, we started looking into police-related deaths in New York City for the past 10 years, from 2010 to 2019. And we were able to identify 103 deaths associated with the police during that time, doing as much research as we can. It's possible that there are others, but we tried our best. So we started with Wikipedia entries of all killings of the police in the country, mm-hmm. and then narrowed down from there. And then after identifying all the New York killings there, we also went onto the NYPD's reporting of its own use of force reports. So firearms discharge reports and then use of force reports. Mm-hmm. And
in between that, actually, sorry, mm-hmm. just to clarify, we also found a number of other sources that had listed out different years of these are all the people that were killed in this year by police. And it didn't all quite link up. You know, there were some names on one list, some different names on another list. So we just compiled everything that we could find.
Yes. Yes. So all in all, we identified 103. That list we generated into a map, which you can see on our clothing page. And you can see the concentration of areas in the city where these deaths occurred. In addition, if you click on any one of them, you have a listing of the person's name, the date, their age of death, and as well as a description of what occurred. We tried to be neutral in reporting exactly what occurred. And you can search based on that person's name to find out more information. However, there are about 12 cases there that are listed in the use of force reports by the police, but are not covered in any fashion in the news mm-hmm. that we could find.
And in all of the reports from the use of force police, or the in all of the incident reports in that use of force report from the NYPD, none of them list the name.
No.
So we were able to find, based on, they all list the date and they all list just the incident report that's generated on their end. And I think they also all list the precinct number. Some of them go into actually saying what neighborhood or what street it was on, something like that. They don't all say that. But none of them say the name of the person that was killed. So all of these that we found that are unnamed were incidents that we found on that use of force report. But then, like you said, couldn't find any articles or anything on the internet about that with pretty significant time spent searching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, part of this would be if people are able to identify these people for us while we're doing the project. That would be very interesting.
Yeah.
I will say that there are actually, and this sounds unbelievable, but there are actually two cases where not even the precinct is identified in the description. Mm. So the police reports identify a case where somebody was killed during the course of enforcing law, and you have no idea where this happened. Somebody died, and right. nobody picked up on it, and that's just that.
Yeah.
So for these shirts that we made, and I'm pulling it up now at the same time, so what we did was take two of those cases where there is no reporting going on whatsoever, and we made shirts that in some fashion or another memorialize and kind of put out into the world the fact that these things happened. And both for us to talk about it now and for us to talk about it when people inquire as to what exactly, you know, is the story with the shirts. Mm-hmm. And so in addition to that, using all the killings that we found, not just the ones that are purely unidentified, we have paired a killing to a route so that we will pass nearby an area where something happened each week. And we don't know what form that will take in terms of documentation at this point, but we will be sharing in some capacity, either through the website by sharing links and the story of what's going on, possibly some video, possibly communicating about it on the podcast. We're not really sure.
Yeah.
But as we said, we want to have this be in some fashion a part of what we're doing.
Yeah. And both to share it so that other people can be thinking about this and know the stories of these people that were killed, humanize them a bit, because right now they're, especially the unnamed people, are just linked as killed criminals, basically, and that's no way to go out. So we want to give some humanization to those people and then also learn more about the movement of, you know, abolishing the police or abolishing prisons or reframing the criminal justice system to make it actually a justice system instead of what it is right now. I would love to learn more about that. And obviously, I'm not an expert in that by any means. So we'll be talking about these things from the limited information that we have now and knowledge that we have now, and hopefully that will only grow. And I'm just going to put it out there right now, too. We would love to have people on here that are more knowledgeable about anything that relates to this, really. Criminal justice reform, new social justice programs, what could be, you know, what the budget that is meant to go to the police right now could go to instead, what it looks like to abolish prisons, any of this stuff. If there's people that are listening, or if you know somebody that is active in this type of work, we would love to have them on just to, you know, learn more ourselves, share what they know with our community, and just try to engage so that hopefully this movement can continue to move forward.
Yep. Yeah, we're looking to incorporate what's going on into our lives and our project in a way that's durable and sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way that's made sense to us so far.
Yeah.
And hopefully by bringing it into the consciousness in this way, it can forward things in a way that, yeah, that allows for, I think, the getting this movement onto the tracks of clearly identifiable, like, progress,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
and just something that is maintainable, you know. But so the first week we intended to cover was the week that was on my shirt because we went through the neighborhood where that incident occurred. And I will read the incident report now. Again, this is something that there is no news coverage of.
Mm-hmm.
So this occurred on June 29th, 2012, which actually will be, if all goes well with putting this podcast out, the day previous. That'll be this coming Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And so
7 or 8 years ago.
8 years ago, yes. Firearms discharge report, 2012. On June 29th at 1000 hours in the 83rd precinct, and the 83rd precinct is actually the Bushwick precinct. It's located on Knickerbocker. It's an aside. A sergeant and a police officer conducting a routine patrol were approached by a victim who stated that a man with a firearm was trying to break into his house. The officers asked the man to get into their vehicle to let them know if he saw the man with the firearm. After canvassing the area with negative results, the officers took the man back to his home, where the attempted break-in had occurred, to complete their report. On the way back to the location, the victim spotted the subject and pointed him out to the officers. When the officers tried to approach the subject, he turned and brandished a silver revolver and pointed it in the direction of the officers while fleeing on foot. Hearing the officers' radio transmissions for help, two additional officers and a lieutenant responded to the area and began looking for the subject, who had carjacked a second victim. While approaching the vehicle, the lieutenant observed the subject again point the firearm at the officers and flee on foot. During the foot pursuit, an officer fired one round at the subject, striking him in the head and causing his demise. The subject had numerous prior arrests, including robbery and attempted murder. So that's the extent of this report on an unidentified death. And there are lots of things to unpack about that as far as I'm concerned. And I think the easiest one for me to think about is what I just described sounded like something out of a movie in terms of the level of action. Man tried to break into a house, a man carjacked somebody else, and then was shot in the head while being pursued by multiple police officers at 10 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
And somehow that was something that was not a news story.
Right.
That's so hard for me to believe. I understand that that's, I guess it's possible. You know, we went through the police blotters, which the New York Post keeps a police blotter on every day, and that was not identified at all as something that happened. But yeah, it's and we read through a number of stories that were similar that were covered on news, you know.
Yeah.
Without any issue. So that makes me wonder exactly how that something
how
like that
slipped by.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was 2012. I guess what other news was happening that day could be a question that we would ask. Like, what else were people covering on June 29th, 2012?
Well, I think, ironically, there was a news story about a police officer getting some sort of honors awarded to him.
Oh, wow.
That was the only thing that I saw about that there.
Yeah.
And so that's the first thing, you know, to have something so described, at least, so remarkably not have reporting on it.
Right.
The second thing being, if this is the only version of the story that exists, it starts to become very much, do I believe that this is what actually happened, you know? Because that it's a type of thing that if you see something that's so built up, it almost makes you not want to go into it further, you know? You don't, it's like, okay, well, especially that this is something that's common when you read these use of force reports. They almost always end with the subject's prior arrests and what it is, you know, the implication being this was a bad person.
Right. Which, yeah. And I think it's interesting. I have had this feeling because I've read so many of them now that I read what happened. And in this case, like, this is really challenging because this guy was robbing someone with a gun. Presumably there was actually a gun. Then he ultimately was still in the neighborhood, stole someone's car with the same gun, you know. And then it's really hard for me to think, especially in these times right now where there's so much communication about defund the police and, like, we need the police and going back and forth. And the way I was brought up and what I was taught to believe is that the police will be a safe, or like the safe people, right? And they'll protect me from the bad people. And to be honest, my initial urge is to think, okay, well, maybe this time it was valid, you know, what else were they to do? But I really have to check myself when I start to think that way, because then there's this criminal record, which, like you said, it's meant to make us think, oh, this was a bad person, this was a career criminal, as the Post might say. But this is a person that clearly had issues with crime and had already been in the system, and the system had failed them. They've been arrested and there's been no rehabilitation for them. They've, you know, there've been multiple run-ins with police, and clearly the police aren't stopping crime. They're responding to it. They ultimately killed someone while he was in process of driving away someone's car in this incident. So I guess they got the car back for this person. But other than that, they really didn't stop any crime from happening. What they did was they killed someone that they had previously failed to rehabilitate, because that's not part of our criminal justice system right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm trying to actively flip the way that I hear these things. I want to consider it from all sides because I think that that's the productive way to move forward. I would like to be able to have conversations with both the people that are further ahead on this thought process that I'm just kind of getting onto, but I'd also like to be able to have conversations with people that are still thinking in the way that I might have thought even just, you know, I don't know, less than a year ago.
Yeah. So that's where we are with our thought process on identifying the killings that we're going to talk about or not. There's not really an intention to report all the ones that are clearly wrong or all the ones that are clearly right, mm-hmm. or whatever that means. We want to be able to kind of have a diverse range of these situations in order to start having a conversation that fits solutions.
Right. Yeah, and I think trying to talk about this with less judgment on maybe what was done and more productive thinking on what could be done better moving forward.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, no one wants any of this to be happening. No one wants to be robbed at gunpoint. No one wants the police to be killing people. Or maybe there are people that want that, but they are definitely the far few in between. I think the majority of people want none of this to be happening. They want people that are having trouble to get help, and they don't want people to be shot by police.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the takeaway that we have from this one. My big thing is I would not like it that the only way killing is reported is through the lens of a law enforcement's form fill out.
Yes. Yes. And actually, another big problem that I have with that form fill out is that it reports the criminal history of the person that's been killed. It doesn't report at all who the officer was, and it doesn't report at all the officer's history.
Right.
And yeah. We've found out in a lot of the cases that have made big news headlines, a number of times those officers have had a lot of complaints filed against them. But that's never in these use of force documents, which I think is really important.
Yeah.
If we're going to have a document that explains every time that a policeman or woman has fired their gun, we should know if it's the same person that's doing it over and over. Maybe that person needs to be reevaluated themselves.
Yeah. I think it's totally reasonable to be able to identify what the history of the officer was that was involved, or officers were that were involved.
Yeah.
I think that's a really compelling point.
Yeah. Right. Because at this point, it's just very one-sided.
Yeah.
We think, and it is, it's because we've all, not all of us, but a lot of us, especially those of us that have grown up with whatever form of privilege has allowed us to think that the police are the safe people to trust. We think that we can trust them, and we think that whatever is coming from that side is accurate. And I think it's time for everybody to start, you know, realizing that we need all the information.
Yeah. And I would be interested to understand what the obligation the police is, the police has, with respect to communicating to the press that things like these, this have happened, and what realistically that would do. Just kind of having a conversation about that, that they should recognize they have inherent biases. And it's not, I mean, I'm not even saying just the police have inherent biases, but anybody that's having to report a situation will have a perspective on it. And the public should have the right to have an external party investigate a death, you know?
Right.
And, you know, that some of the articles that we've read, unfortunately, the only article that you have is from a source like The Post, which uses language that is deliberately incendiary in order to paint criminals as, you know, lifelong criminal thugs and just people that are hell-bent on contaminating society with their terribleness, you know?
Right.
And it's, at least there would be some version of that that would be out in the world. We don't even have that version, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, I understand why people read that version, because it plays into the idea of good and bad. It plays into, oh, well, there's, look at these terrible people. You can feel better about yourself. Maybe you, you know, maybe you did something terrible this morning, but then you find out that there's this lifelong career criminal and you're nowhere near that. So you can feel like you're on a higher stone than these other humans. But
yeah.
In reality, we're all humans and we all have the potential to do good or bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe this was dated wrong, which is not acceptable either. You know, like
right.
To have a document that was somehow was 329 instead of 629. I mean, I looked on either end. We both looked on either end of the date to see if there was anything on, and there wasn't. But a story like this, a place like the New York Post would be salivating to report on because it's
right.
So salacious, but it's not there. So I, you know, this is all we have.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe we'll find, maybe there is another source that just doesn't show up in the SEO or whatever. Maybe there is a source that reports on this and we just don't know about it yet, but I hope that that's the case. I would like to learn more.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is all we have for now. And then you can take a look at the shirt on our website. But the way that the one that I created was structured has the entirety of the borough of Brooklyn outlined and then the date spray painted on in negative space with a rectangle and then the date inside the rectangle and then the precinct in which it occurred outlined within the borough and then striped to identify that this took place somewhere within this area. Because again, some of these police reports don't list the location, and this is one of those. It just has the precinct in general, which I would think is unacceptable as well. I don't know why that's information that can't be provided.
Right. Yeah.
Because that would allow people to research and find out what's going on.
Yeah.
Further.
Get a little bit more information about it.
Yeah. It assures that if the date is wrong, then the locations could potentially pop up in a search or something
True.
Like that.
Yeah.
So that's that with respect to our shirts. We don't know what the fall is going to look like with respect to the shirts, but this yeah. is what we're doing now.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, a big part of what this project looked like from the beginning of when we started planning it was that we want to engage with everything that's important that's going on in the world. So we're going to be out walking every day. We want to be able to take things in, process them, talk about them, share that, take more in, process it, share it, you know, whether it's about the same thing on a regular basis or whether we get more, you know, new information. So far, 2020 has been a real wild ride. So who knows what the fall is going to look like? I don't even want to make a guess right now. But whatever seems to make the most sense and makes it seem like we're not only getting a physical exercise, but also intellectual, emotional, and justice-oriented exercise seems like what I'm looking for right now, and maybe what, you know, seems like a good thing that I can share with the world.
Yeah. So I think that might do it for this episode, unless there's anything else you want to talk about.
I think it's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thank anyone that has listened to the whole thing or listened to any of the segments. If you want to be notified that we're going to be putting stuff out and you haven't already, there's a little notification bell you can press. And there's other videos and things to listen to and watch on our YouTube page. So check it out and get in touch with us if there's anything that you want to share, or you can put it in the comments, or you can reach out to us directly if you have thoughts on things we brought up in the podcast today or other things you've seen or heard. We'd love to hear your thoughts and your perspective.
Yeah. And I think next week, we're going to try and talk a little bit about the entirety of the project. If you've been watching from the first episode, you may recall that we deferred on that until the project actually began in earnest. So there may be some of you, in all likelihood, all of you, really, that don't have the full scope of what it is that we're intending to do with this project. So we'd like an opportunity to talk about that, and hopefully we'll get a chance to do that next week, in addition to talking about how our week two walk went. So,
yeah, all right. Well, thanks for watching.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, take care.